And thank you for coming to this launch of the Shakespearean London Theatres project. I hope you are all here for Shakespearean London Theatres. If you're looking for David Bowie, you've come through the wrong door. One notice I need to make before we start. If you need to leave, if you need the toilets during the launch, then please exit through that door and go down the stairs, and they're right there at the bottom of the stairs. The highlight of our afternoon today will be a talk from Professor Andrew Gurr on the topic of why was the Globe Theatre round. But before we do that, we've got an hour in which we want to introduce to you the Shakespearean London Theatres project, tell you what it is, why we did it, and what we can give to you. And there's a lot we can give. It's a very giving project. I'm going to hang loosely back as Master of Ceremonies for this launch and introduce each person. To become clear later just what my role is in this, which is hanging around at the back and introducing people. My first speaker I'd like to introduce to you is Geoffrey Marsh, who's Director of Theatre and Performance here at the V&A.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I've got 5 minutes, so I'm going to be very quick, and I'm just going to say five things. The first thing is, on behalf of the V&A and the Department of Theatre and Performance, I'd like to invite you all here, and I hope you have an enjoyable afternoon. And I hope you've all been to the V&A before, but if you haven't, I'm going to say a couple of words about the department in a minute. I think that when this project was first proposed to research into the Shakespearean theatres of London, the people involved didn't realise that I had a vested interest, because in 1971, when I was 14, I didn't like going to school very much. I decided I wanted to become an archaeologist. I don't know how I ended up at the V&A, but that's another story. And so I used to go and excavate in Southwark, which at that time, some of the older people may remember, was an extraordinary mixture of decaying and rotting warehouses. I particularly remember excavating in the remnants of an Anchor butter warehouse, where all the butter had melted down onto the floors. And the first sort of really horrible late 60s, early 70s office developments, which still scar a lot of Southwark. And then wandering into that scene in 1972, I guess 73, was this extraordinary man, Sam Warnemaker, who several of you here had pleasure to work with. I never worked with him, but I do remember him coming along and giving us a lecture on how he was going to build the Globe Theatre. And I think it's absolutely astonishing now, 40 years on, not only has that been achieved, but the other discoveries which are taking place in London, and also the ancillary academic work of which this is part, to look at the broader picture of the Shakespearean theatres around London. As some of you know, I've curated the David Bowie exhibition, which is not what I'm going to talk about, although I have to say it's rather distracted me from more involvement in this project than... It's a salutary point that in 1973, when Sam was sort of launching his ideas, only 50% of the houses in Britain had a telephone. That was the period when Ziggy Stardust was coming down into our households. And I think one of the extraordinary things, both in museums but in the broader academic community, that we've had to face over, particularly over the last 10, 15 years, is the extraordinary revolution in the ways that we're only able to communicate. And obviously, a key part of this project is the idea of knowledge transfer, and that's part that the V&A plays. And just to give you some idea about our audience, this year was the first year that the V&A had over 3 million visitors. So there's a huge audience out there with real hunger, and I think what the team have achieved in a mix of things which aimed at different audiences, which you'll hear about this afternoon, is really remarkable. Just before just talking about the project, I just wanted to mention two things about the department. One, we're here. Some people still don't know that there is a theatre and performance department within the V&A. We've been here since 1924, so we're not as old as some of the departments, but we've been here a long time. And one thing I particularly wanted to mention, because I hope she's up there somewhere. Where's Emily? Oh, Emily. Emily, can you stand up? Some of you may know that we have a unique agreement with the entertainment unions, which allows us to film theatre free of charge. We've been doing it for nearly just over 20 years, and we do have about a dozen or so Shakespeare recordings in that, Emily, who you can nab at, I think she's got to go off at tea time, has recently taken over as the film producer for my department, and she's certainly planning 6 or 8 recordings, is that right, over the next few months, leading down to the 450th anniversary of Shakespeare's birth next year. And she comes hot from having done Julius Caesar at the Donmar a few months ago, and most recently Hamlet at Trafalgar Studios. So if there's particular productions that you wanted to see and you either missed or haven't been able to get a ticket, do look on our website, because they're all listed there. And we are genuinely interested in views that people have, particularly from the academic community, about things that we might record in the future. We have very small resource. Emily has to make a small amount of money go a very long way. But if you know of things that you think are particularly interesting, we are, particularly obviously over the next 2 years, because of all the anniversaries, interested in augmenting our recordings of Shakespearean productions. The final thing I just wanted to say was, if anybody's interested in the department and wants to know a little bit about it, there's a leaflet here, which I'll just leave over here. And then finally, to say something about the project, some of you that I recognise here will remember that many, many years ago, I did a map of Roman London when I was at the Museum of London. And it's been very enjoyable to see this project produce a map, which I think has come out very well. Is he looking where I put it? I had a copy here a minute ago. Anyway, which I hope you've all got a copy of. But for those who are interested as London as an entertainment centre over hundreds of years, which I guess is one of my responsibilities, we've also done a David Bowie map. And one of the interesting things, if you get the two maps and you'll compare them, you'll find there's an interesting overlap. I will say no more, but there's some there. And I think that overlap says something very much about the nature of London as an entertainment capital over the centuries. In some ways, it's had this extraordinary postmodern economy where relying on the court and the inns of court and other features like that, there's a very, very specific geography where entertainment has been shaped by all sorts of factors, obviously legal factors, but other practical factors of where the money is. And I think when you look at, if you have time at tea, to look at where that overlap looks, which is currently rather a depressing part of London, I think it suggests some things about how the nature of London areas wax and wane, and the areas that were very successful 200, 300, 400 years ago go and decline and then come back again. And I think that the development of the Globe Theatre has been a fantastic thing, when I go back to Southwark, to see how it's been changed over the years. But I think one of the great things about this project is how it will draw attention to the other theatres, particularly on the north side of London, in that rather uninviting zone between the city and the inner suburbs, and particularly with the growth of Hoxton as a real centre for the digital industries. I certainly look forward to a lot of these sites not only being made more publicly available, but the whole area of that zone of inner suburbs, which obviously for Shakespeare was a fascinating area, being much more part of modern London. So at that point, I'll finish, and I hope you enjoy the rest of today. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Jeff. My brief then for the next 5 minutes is to tell you what the Shakespearean London Theatres project is, and also why we're here, why we're in the V&A. As Jeff mentioned, the V&A is the nation's custodian of artifacts for theatre history. And the project is a partnership between theatre historians and the V&A. It's a knowledge exchange between the two groups for the purpose of letting some of that knowledge that we have stored up in our heads about theatre in Shakespeare's time get out into the public. It's an unashamedly tourist-oriented project. Tourists, we feel, deserve to know the very best that is known about theatre in Shakespeare's time, rather than the somewhat second-hand, out-of-date material they might find in the guidebooks that they could buy ordinarily. And we decided quite early on that we were not only going to give the stuff to the tourists in the sense of impart the latest knowledge, but give in a sense of not charge. So one thing I want to talk about briefly, and we have a question and answer panel at the end, is our not charging philosophy. This is a Creative Commons licensed project. Everything that we create ourselves, we are giving away. You may use it for any purpose you like. If you like one of our films and you think you can put it onto a DVD and sell it, go ahead. We license you to do that. If you want to take our images and reuse them in your teaching, in your research, or anything commercial, you may do so. There are no limits on the things we've created. So what we're going to do in the launch session until 3 o'clock is show you those things. And what we've created are six kinds of output, as the funding body calls them. We've made a free walking map. We've made 18,000 copies of a map that you will find given away in tourist offices and other places. Just pick one up. Take two. Give one to your friends. They show you where to walk around modern London within a two-mile radius of St. Paul's Cathedral to see the sites where there were theatres and theatre-related buildings. And by that, I mean things like churches where actors are buried, or the Revels office where scripts were brought for licensing. Those buildings will take you to them and will tell you about them. There's also a glossy guidebook that gives you the map plus, as it were, the extra narrative, the story of theatre in Shakespeare's time. If you don't want to use paper to get around London, if you're used to using your telephone to walk yourself around London, download our smartphone app. It knows where you are and which way you're facing and will take you to these sites and give you our texts and our pictures and indeed, which I'm coming to, our videos. There is, of course, always a website that has all our things on it and, as I said, unrestricted. If you can find some of our stuff and you like it, take it. Don't ask us for permission. You don't need to. I mentioned videos. We've had an hour's worth more, actually, of documentary video made about theatre in Shakespeare's time, including freshly filmed scenes, excerpts from particular plays that we think illustrate or exemplify particular important questions about theatre in this period. Jeff mentioned Shakespeare and the Globe, and if I wanted you to take away one philosophical message, as it were, from this launch, it's that we're interested in all the others as well, Shakespeare and the world in which he lived in as a theatre industry, because that is something that the theatre historians know an awful lot about and the public don't know about, and are particularly concerned to redress the balance. So yes, the Globe, but also the Rose, the Theatre, the Curtain, the Red Bull. And what do scholars know about those things we didn't know 10 years ago? That's what our project wants to bring to anybody who's interested in that. Is that all our outputs? Walking map, guide, website, videos, public talks, smartphone app. Yes, we have a series of public talks here at the V&A throughout the summer, the first of which is our 3 o'clock talk today from Professor Andrew Gurr. Who's in it? Well, the project has a principal investigator, as the funding bodies call it. That's me, Gabriel Egan. Principal investigator is the official term. Fall guy is the actual term. That's the person who actually has to explain where the money went. We are very generously funded by the Arts and Humanities Research Council. I work for De Montfort University, so this is a partnership between university and public-facing arts institution. We have a project manager, Dr. Maurice Hindle, who will be speaking in a moment, and a postdoctoral research associate, Dr. Peter Silito. The next person to speak then, to tell you exactly where this project came from, what the ideas behind it were, is the one who really most of all dreamt it up, which is in fact our project manager, Dr. Maurice Hindle, who will speak now.
Hello. This is a proud moment for me, and I want to relish it for a second. Thank you. Right, I'm relishing it. What I'm relishing is the fact of some of the six outputs, particularly that Gabriel has just mentioned. The map, the guide, the website, the app, the films, and the expert lectures, all six of our promised outputs, as they call them in the AHRC speak, are complete or on their way to completion. And I think in 20 months since we started, that's pretty good going. And this is the only public opportunity to thank various people for making Shakespeare and London theatres and its outcomes a reality. So I want to spend a few minutes thanking various of them. I'll try not to make it too boring. Then to say a little bit of how the project came about. As Gable said, I devised it, I dreamt it up. First, I want to thank all the V&A staff that have helped us to get to this point today. Geoffrey Marsh, you've heard speak already about something about the project and the place of this department in the firmament of theatre history in this country. He was particularly helpful for us to be able to help us steer through the Byzantine organisation of the V&A, which is a bit like Vatican City or something. I mean, it's really a difficult place to negotiate unless you're in the know. We're sort of a little bit in the know now. So thanks to Geoffrey. Kate, other names, Kate Bailey, Anna Landreth-Strong, Vanessa Isles, who's Jeff's assistant, who unfortunately can't be here today, has been very helpful to us and continues to be helpful. Holly Harris, Kat McDonald, Grace Irvin, Elizabeth Harris, Jewel Ruby, Natalia Cara, and Gayatri Upal. That's the V&A people. If I've missed anyone out, I'm sorry, but I thank you too. Then, most important, because everybody's important that's involved in making it happen, but our commercial partners, who've been vital to the production of these outputs, the Map Designers and Makers Geo Information Group at Cambridge, Alan Jones, who I don't think could be here today, but Seppi Casatari, Chris Going, and above all, Philip Deller, the person who really did put the map together in Cambridge. Philip, I don't know, I can't quite see it at the moment. There you are, right. You remember those sunny days we spent poring over Photoshop for weeks on end last summer? And the outcome was the map that I think you've all now got, this. And we're quite proud of it, really. In fact, at least three people have said to me they think it's beautiful, which is quite a compliment, and I'm not going to object. I hope it's also useful in the way that Gabriel has already mentioned, to get you around these walks that take you to the different parts of London, where the original sites were. Nigel Soper, the designer of our guide, which was recently described to me by somebody at Nick Hearn Books as both elegant and informative. And again, I'm not going to disagree if people think that. This is it, if you haven't already seen it. It's available for sale out on the table afterwards. So not absolutely everything is free on the project, although it would be nice if it was. We'll have to think about that over the next 4 months, I think, in terms of the website access to that particular output. So Nigel, I want to thank very much for the book design was absolutely brilliant, and thank you for that. Our Rock Kitchen Harris colleagues, the strangely named but exotic people who made our database, website and app that again Gabriel has already mentioned, all recently come online and now available. Paul Sculthorpe, Carl Baylis and David Moore, Matthew Otts are all here today. And I think Paul is the person who's going to demonstrate the app and the website after I've stopped speaking. James Wallace, stage director for our Shout films. We call it Shout, Shakespeare and London Theatres. And some of the actors who took part in them. We've got five. There will be 5 10-minute films, excerpts from different plays, as Gabriel said, that have been woven into discussion with talking heads, including Andrew Gurr and a lot of other senior scholars involved in the history of early modern theatre, and an overview film. So they're all 10-minute films, add up to an hour. A privilege to be thanking the producer, director and filmmaker, John Wyver, of Illuminations Media. John's broadcast productions include the RSC productions of Hamlet, broadcast productions of Hamlet with David Tennant, and Penny Downey, who's here today, played Gertrude, I'm glad to say, here today with her partner, playwright Nick Deer. Macbeth, he did with Patrick Stewart, and most recently Julius Caesar. We trust he's going to give the star treatment to our films as much as he has to all those others. And we're looking forward to his little presentation of them in a little while. It's the first time any of us have seen them or it. It's going to focus, I think, the one we're looking at on the Spanish tragedy. And I think at this point I wanted to thank my partner and friend, Gabrielle Brown, who's been a genuine helper at times to me on this project. I hope she's still my friend after putting up with all the rants. My OU colleagues from a former existence will remember that, perhaps. So I haven't changed that much, but it's not a very serious thing. But as I say, one gets pressures at times, and getting this in on 20 months to the stage it's got, I think it's been quite pressured at times, but obviously it's a great opportunity to do the whole thing. Finally, my colleagues in the SHALT team, Gabriel Egan, our principal investigator, who agreed to come aboard to lead the AHS HRC bid at a crucial point in 2010, and without whom none of this project could have gone forward, especially on the digital front. Peter Cilito, who Gabriel mentioned, is full-time postdoctoral research associate on the project, whose energy, enthusiasm and commitment have remained amazingly unabated since he was appointed in September 2011. Thank you, Peter. Keep going to the end. And last, but definitely not least, Andrew Gurr, our intellectual guide and mainstay on the team. I think it's fair to say that. Way back in 2008, autumn, in the introductory lecture he gave to a three-day conference put on by Shakespeare's Globe in his honour, he inspired me to start dreaming up what would eventually become this project that I called Shakespeare in London Theatres. Originally, I had the thought that an exhibition would be good enough, but as these things develop, as you know, you've been involved in projects, they transform out of all recognition and become much, much bigger than I ever anticipated. I just wanted to recall one thing from that lecture, that introductory lecture that day, that held me another spellbound, I think, in tracing the history of the theatres in late 16th century London. I've still got the little notebook where I wrote down a few things that triggered off the whole thing. I came across it the other day. And the one thing that it contains a note of is something Andy said and stayed with me ever since. It touches a little bit on what Jeff was saying at the beginning to do with the entrepreneurial world in a way. How James Burbage, builder of the first commercial theatre at Shoreditch, the place that's difficult to negotiate, apparently, but it's easy to get to. In 1596, when indoor playing spaces were denied to players in the City of London through the Mayor's 1594 ban on playing at inns, this is what Andy was talking about at that moment. James Burbage, the father of Richard Burbage, the famous Shakespearean actor, the famous actor in Shakespeare's group, Chamberlain's Men and then the King's Men, he somehow or other raised £600, is what Andy said, which is getting on for a million today in today's money, give or take, to buy the lease of what he turned into the Blackfriars Playhouse, the blueprint for all British theatres to come. I just think what struck me is what a stupendous entrepreneurial vision and a great investment that was for Burbage. I think he begged and borrowed all the money and perhaps paid high prices for borrowing it at the time. But that was one of the things that stuck with me. James Burbage, I think we owe a vote of thanks to designing a theatre that became the most fashionable and popular of the age and led the way to all the other theatres that would eventually appear and the West End from the 17th century onwards. So, Andy, I wanted to thank you for the precious investment of your time, interest and friendship that you've given to me and this project. We're looking forward to your lecture at 4 o'clock. Thank you. Now I would... You'll do the next thing.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Ross.
So I described myself as the fall guy or the principal investigator. Of course, Andrew Gurr is my co-investigator. And when I fancy myself as a theatre historian, I have to reevaluate that when I'm in the presence of Andy, which is a way of saying, if you find anything that's wrong in any of the materials produced by this project, Andrew Gurr has read them all and approved them all, and we cheerfully pass all responsibility at that point to Andrew. But we don't think, you may find things that challenge what you thought you knew about the theatres, we don't think you'll find ever in our stuff. Let's show you our stuff. You've got the free walking map. Yes, I did say things were free. Free has more than one meaning, doesn't it? Free as in free speech, free as in free lunch. Our stuff is free in the intellectual sense, that you may copy it. There's no restriction upon it. Some of the stuff there's a small charge for. The guidebook has a small charge. A smartphone app has a small charge. But let's show you the other stuff. In particular, first of all, we're going to show you the website and the smartphone app. And then after that, we're going to show you the documentary footage and the filmed scenes that have been made by the project. So I'd like to first of all introduce Paul Sculthorpe from our software developers, Rock Kitchen Harris.
Excellent. Hello, everybody. I've put that it would take me 4 minutes. I think I'm going to... It's a little bit nervous and bigger than I expected, and the bigger screen is probably going to be 3 minutes. So, hello. We'll see how it goes. where are we? Yeah. So, Gabriel came to see us and needed this website and the mobile app, and I'll get onto those super quick. But behind the scenes, there's something that I think Peter's most familiar with, is using the underlying database, a sort of... a web-based database that Peter and Morris and Gabriel and others log into and fill this with amazing information. So whilst Gabriel keeps saying how great the website is and whatever, it's the information that's in it really that's made it what it is. So it's really handy. So I'm going to show the website first. Just super quick, like all these things, it's best if you just go online and have a look for yourselves, but I'll just quickly take you through it and see what you think. So the main thing, obviously, the geography of where all these theatres are, the walks you can take, and we've just tried to keep it as close to the map that's disappeared as possible, but still suitable for looking at online and using online. There's no sort of login or anything, you just go on the website and you've got access to all of this. You can switch things on and off, you can zoom in and out of the map, you can click around, find different locations. Nearest tube stations are on there to go with the walking directions. So as I said before, the key thing is the amount of content there is for each of these locations. Without that, it wouldn't be much. It'd be a bare bones website. But there is so much rich content in here that amazingly and thankfully is free for anybody to use. We have maps, really high resolution photographs from here at V&A, some old scripts and illustrations, photography, lots of pictures of Peter holding a map in the street outside various locations. Really, really good stuff, and like I keep saying, that's the main thing about this is the content. Image galleries. Depending on which location you're at, it will show you nearby locations, so you can sort of browse around the content based on geography, which is quite a handy thing to do. There's national grid reference coordinates on there for GPS and different things. And these great illustrations that you can also download at full resolution as well. There's all sorts in there, way more than we expected, actually, when we put this together, which took up a bit more space on our servers, but hey, it was worth it. So that's the website, really. That was the basics of the website. And then there's a mobile app. The pictures on the screen are an iPhone, purely because it's easy to take screenshots of an iPhone, but there's an Android app too. So, and there isn't, I don't know if I should say, there isn't a charge for the app.
It is not.
No, it's free.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Phew, thought I was in trouble then. I'll just quickly take you through this. Again, it's the same information, but obviously the beauty of having this in your pocket, you've got the phone knows where you are, so it can show you relative to where you are, where these locations are. Similar levels of information, there are photographs, illustrations, lots of content again. Photographs. And then there's the map as well, so depending on which device you're on, you know, the maps, the actual underlying map may differ in how it looks, but the data's all there, so you can zoom in, you can tap on a location, you can jump to that location and get around. And here's one of the walks. I just realised I'm not very sharp on that screen. But you can look at individual walks and it can show you everything along that walk and you'll get the little blue dot, which I can't show on a screenshot, but it does work and it's there. And I think that's about it. That's the website and the mobile app. These are the links. Oh, sorry, one more slide. Yeah, talking of free and all that stuff, these are just some of the tools that us geeks use to build things like this. And they've all been really important in being able to put this together. And they're all completely free, made by lots of enthusiastic developers around the world. So shout out to the geeks. you can go to the website now, and the app is available in the Apple App Store at the moment, and Google Play, I think, is coming soon. Kyle, shortly, we'll have that too. And when I put these slides together, I put a shameless little promotion for us in there, but thankfully it's on a huge screen, so you can all see our website and visit that too. And that's it. Thanks.
If you want really clever people who understand software and why it should be used for cultural outputs, I can't recommend Rock Kitchen House too highly. They've been absolutely fantastic. They've understood why we wanted to do this the way that we've done it. And I can't believe I forgot this. Of course, the smartphone app is also downloadable for free. Next thing we want to show you is the films that we've made. So I'd like to introduce John Wyver, who will show you.
Well, almost is what I have to say to that. This is still very much a work in progress, and what I'm going to show you is some elements of the films that we've been working on. I'm very grateful to Gabriel and to Morris and the rest of the Shout team for the opportunity to work with them to make these short films. As Morris kindly said, I'm a television producer, a media producer. I've had the privilege of working with the Royal Shakespeare Company on translating three of its stage plays from the theatre to television. I've done the same thing with the Chichester Festival Theatre, Macbeth. I'm very interested in the questions of how you translate stage work from the theatre to television, now the cinema and other screens. And I'm involved in my own AHRC-funded research project called Screenplays, Theatre Plays on British Television, which is documenting the history of theatre plays that have been produced since 1930 for British television. So I was fascinated by the challenge and the idea of creating some films to complement other elements, the other outputs of this project. There is, of course, a fundamental problem when you want to make documentary material about Elizabethan and Jacobean London, which is there aren't many images. And the images that do exist don't do very much. They certainly don't move in the way that archive footage from much later might do. Clips from Shakespeare in Love are regrettably prohibitively expensive in a project like this, and probably Professor Gurr would say not terribly accurate. So we wanted to try and find a way of doing something more than stringing together the very distinguished talking heads that we've been lucky enough to film. Documentaries that tackle this area tend to fall back on either unconvincing and almost certainly inaccurate reconstruction of some kind, or shots of presenters walking meaningfully around Bankside. This is a solution, although we don't have presenters. Shots of Bankside, as you'll see, are, I'm afraid, unavoidable. But I hope they don't feel too absurd. I'll come to the other part of the solution that we came up with in a moment. There's also the question, when you're thinking about this kind of project, of the length of the film or films that you make. And we set out with the idea that we might make a one-hour film about this topic. But actually, as we began to talk about it, it seemed less and less useful to make a one-hour film. Television almost certainly wasn't going to be interested. It would either do such a thing itself or not be engaged sufficiently in the subject. And a one-hour film felt like it would be a little intractable to be used genuinely in different contexts, in education, in presentations, online, and so forth. So what we decided to do was to make 6 10-minute films, as Maurice said, one of which will be a general overview film, and 5 of which tackle particular aspects of this subject. I also didn't want just to translate the material that's on the website and in the book onto the screen. I wanted to find a way of making something that was complementary and extended the idea of the project, rather than simply replicating the material that was probably easier to assimilate in textual form or from the app. So with the invaluable help of James Wallace, who's an actor, a director, and an early modern man, we came up with the idea that we'd make 5 films that, in some sense, are focused on 5 key theatrical figures of the time that we were looking at. And those 5 figures are John Lilly, James Burbage, and then Philip Henslow and Edward Alleyn, but we put them together, Ben Jonson and Christopher Beeston. And we would pair each of those figures, or a pair of figures, with a play that was important, central to their development and to the history of theatre at that moment. And again, with James, we chose Sappho and Phaedo for John Lilly, Richard III for Burbage, the Spanish Tragedy for Henslow and Alleyn, Eastwood Ho for Ben Jonson, and A Fair Quarrel for Christopher Beeston. What we then did was bring together a company of 9, I think, brave and foolhardy actors to rehearse and play these scenes across a short period just before Christmas. And we based ourselves in a studio in South London and then went out to 3 locations, a basement in Trinity Wharf to film the scene from Richard III, to the Rose Theatre, as you'll see in a moment, to film the scene from the Spanish Tragedy, and to the Old Hall at Lincoln's Inn to film the scene from Eastwood Ho. This material of the scenes from the plays is then being complemented in the films by the more conventional interviews with a range of academics and the range of images that do exist or that have been subsequently invented for the theatre at this time. And I'm very grateful to Andrew Gurr, to Gabriel Egan, to Julie Sanders, to Andy Kesson, Lucy Munro, Tiffany Stern, Grace Ayopolo, Martin White, and Michael Dobson, all of whom have given us really compelling and richly interesting interviews for the project. And what I'm hoping, in fact, that we can do, of course, when you do something like this, you film half an hour or up to even an hour of material with these academics, drawing out their ideas and understandings, and then you use tiny fragments of them in the films. So actually it seems to me a rather good idea if we simply put, if we tidy up the interviews, take out the egregious fluffs, of course, which there are very, very few, and I think with the academics' permission, just put the whole interview online for people who are seriously interested in this project to draw from and to learn from in more depth. But I'll show you a fragment now of how we've used part of one of those interviews. I do want to stress that this is work in progress. The films have not gone through the Professor Gurr rigorous fact-checking. They will, of course, do that before we make the final version. They've not been graded, they haven't had the sound work done, and the playout is from an editing system at pretty good resolution, but not quite at full resolution. What I'm going to show you is the 5 minutes or so of the Henslow and Allen film, and then the 5 minutes from the Spanish tragedy. So let me see if I can make sure. Yeah. So this is part of the film about Henslow and Allen, as it is at the moment, a work in progress.
In the 1590s and 1600s, two of the key figures in the London theatre were the financier and manager Philip Henslow and the leading tragic actor Edward Alleyne. Remarkably, they left behind a unique written archive which offers a vivid picture of their world.
What we know about theatre history, particularly this period, survives in manuscript libraries like the British Library, the National Archives, and the papers are often scattered or not collected. We don't have a lot of information about Shakespeare's company because no one kept the papers. Henslow and Allen were shrewd enough and smart enough to keep their papers together. And they created, I think quite deliberately, the world's most important single archive on theater history. They record payments to playwrights, payments to tailors, to haberdashers, to people creating sets. We have exclusive contracts. We have the daily box office receipts for particular periods. We have contracts that tell us what size the theater was supposed to be, how much it cost, how many days it took to complete it, how many sides it should have, what the sight line should be like. And all of these documents we have to piece together for Shakespeare's company or other companies from other sources.
Philip Henslow was a businessman from Devon who was living in Southwark by 1577. We know that he was involved with the Dyer's Company, working in clothing and haberdashery.
Sometime in the 1580s, he seemed to become very interested in theater, possibly because we're not sure, as a dyer, he may have been interacting with people in the theater profession in terms of providing costumes. So in 1585, he takes out a lease on some property in Southwark, which was previously a rose garden. It's called the Little Rose. And in 1587, he arranges to have built there a theater, which became known as the Rose.
The Rose was the fourth purpose-built theater in London and the first to be sited south of the river. It was the first theater on Bankside, an area beyond the official jurisdiction of the City of London and notorious for its inns and brothels. It wasn't until 1989 that the foundations were rediscovered and excavated.
This is the place that contemporaries of Shakespeare and Marlowe and Ben Jonson would have all had their performances performed here. From 1592, we know far more about the space because we have Henslow's accounts book, which is why we know all about Thomas Kyd's Spanish tragedy, because it tells us the dates that it was performed here and how much money it took. And it was performed, 20-odd times here. You know, it was incredibly popular, performed for James I as well as for Queen Elizabeth. So it had an incredible longevity. Most plays, I can't find another play that they would perform for both monarchs.
By the late 1580s, Henslow's Rose was home to the acting company known as the Admiral's Men, and later the Royal Admiral's Men, for which Henslow acted as manager and financier. Thomas Kyd's The Spanish Tragedy is among the plays known to have been acted numerous times by the Admiral's men. Early in the play, Horatio and Belimperia meet for an assignation, during which they are discovered by jealous rivals for her hand.
Now that the night begins with sable wings to overcloud the brightness of the sun, and that in darkness pleasures may be done, come, Belimperia, let us to the bower, and there in safety pass a pleasant hour.
I follow thee, my love, and will not back, although my fainting heart controls my soul.
What make you doubt of Pedringano's faith?
No, he is as trusty as my second self. Go, Pedringano, watch without the gate, and let us know if any make approach.
What means my love?
I know not what myself, and yet My heart foretells me some mischance.
Sweet, say not so. Fair fortune is our friend. And heavens have shut up days to pleasure us. The stars thou seest hold back their twinkling shine, and Luna hides herself to pleasure us.
Thou hast prevailed, and I'll conquer my misdoubt and drown my
Why sit we not for pleasure ask us these? Let's go and sit. Mm-hmm. He goes and sits down. While he's saying this, I think you can move towards him so that you'll be able to turn to say your couplet. Yeah. Bit of Flora's by Horatio here, who the other side will sit you near, and then sit down.
We have an archaeological site with the red lighting that shows the exterior wall of the theatre, the front of the galleries, and the all-important L-shape down there is with front of the stage. So 600 people stood in the yard. The actors up on the stage, a tiny little stage, which is a rectangle with triangles on a trapezoid. It's not a rectangle like the theatre stage at the Globe. Slightly different shape. Very long, thin and narrow because the space here is very small. It's only 72 feet and 6 inches in diameter. So it's incredibly small theatre space. The reconstructed Globe, the rows would fit just inside the yard and the stage space. So it fits in like a polo. It fits the hole in the polo. So that's how much smaller this was.
Among the other plays known to have been...
So if I come out of that one and give you a sense then of how we've moved the rehearsal footage that you've seen there as a complement to the information material about the rose into doing something that's a little more achieved and polished as a full scene from the Spanish tragedy. What we thought would be useful and valuable, particularly given that these plays are simply unavailable in any kind of media form, was that making these scenes, and they're between 5 and 8 minutes long, making these scenes, and as Gabriel says, giving them away online and in other contexts, they might become useful prompts and tools for the teaching of this period and teaching of English literature from this period. So again, this is an edit of that scene from the Spanish tragedy. It still needs some work on the sound and the grading and so forth, but perhaps it'll give you a sense of how we've been able to work with our group of actors to present something that gives an idea, anyway, of one of the major plays of this period.
Now that the night begins with sable wings to overcloud the brightness of the sun, and that in darkness pleasures may be done. Come, Belle Imperial, led us to the bower, and there in safety pass a pleasant hour.
I follow thee, my love, and will not back, although my fainting heart controls my soul.
Why, make you doubt of Pedringano's faith?
No, he is as trusty as my second self. Go, Pedringano. Watch without the gate, and let us know if any make approach.
Instead of watching, I'll deserve more gold by fetching Don Lorenzo to this match.
What means my love?
I know not what myself, and yet my heart foretells me some mischance.
Sweet, say not so. Fair fortune is our friend, and heavens have shut up day to pleasure us. The stars thou seest hold back their twinkling shine, and Luna hides herself to pleasure us.
Thou hast prevailed. I'll conquer my misdoubt, and in thy love and counsel drown my fear. I fear no more. Love now is all my thoughts. Why sit we not? For pleasure asketh ease.
The more thou sitst within these leafy bowers, the more will Flora deck it with her flowers.
Aye, but if Flora spy Horatio here, her jealous eye may think I sit too near.
Hark, madam, how the birds record by night for joy that Bellimperia sits in sight.
No, Cupid counterfeits the nightingale to frame sweet music to Horatio's tale.
If Cupid sings, then Venus is not far. Ay, thou art Venus, or some fairer star.
If I be Venus, thou must needs be Mars, and where Mars reigneth, there must needs be wars.
Then thus begin our wars. Put forth thy hand, that it may combat with my ruder hand.
Set forth thy foot to try the push of mine.
But first my looks shall combat against thine.
Then ward thyself. I dart this kiss at thee.
Thus I retort the dart thou threw'st at me.
Nay, then to gain the glory of the field, my twining arms shall yoke and make thee yield.
Nay, then my arms are large and strong withal, thus elms by vines are compassed till they fall.
Oh, let me go, for in my troubled eyes now mayst thou read that life in passion dies.
Oh, stay a while, and I will die with thee. So shall thou yield, and yet have conquered me.
Who's there? Perdringano? We are betrayed.
My lord, away with her, take her aside. Oh, sir, forbear, your valour is already tried. Quickly dispatch my masters.
What, will you murder me?
Aye, thus.
Ah!
And thus.
Ah!
These are the fruits of love.
Ah!
Oh, save his life and let me die for him. Oh, save him, brother. Save him, Balthazar. I loved Horatio, but he loved not me.
But Balthazar loves Bellimperia.
Oh.
Although his life was still ambitious, proud, yet is he at the highest. Now he is dead. Come, stop her mouth! Away with her.
What outcries pluck me from my naked bed and chill my throbbing heart with trembling fear, which never danger yet could daunt before? Who calls Hieronymo? Speak! Here I am! I did not slumber. Therefore, 'twas no dream. No, no. It was some woman cried for help, and here within this garden did she cry, and in this garden must I rescue her. But stay. What murderous spectacle is this? A man hanged up and all his murderers gone. And in my bower, to lay the guilt on me, this place was made for pleasure, not for death. Those garments that he wears, I oft have seen. Alas, it is Horatio, my sweet son. Oh!
What I will say at this kind of moment, and I don't need to tell this audience of just how great a play the Spanish tragedy is. I'd love to make a full-length film of it, so if anybody's got a spare million or so, do come and buttonhole me afterwards. Very obviously, what we wanted to do was recreate one of the very, very few scenes that we have some kind of record, visual trace of from the theatre of this time, this famous scene of Horatio being discovered in the bower by Hieronymo. Hieronymo, a part strongly associated with Edward Alleyne, and the film that you saw part of goes on to explore Alleyne and his role in this play and in others. I hope that this, the rehearsal material and the other elements will, as I say, weave together into a group of films that will be engaging, that will complement the other great outputs of this project, and that will be above all useful. Now all I've got to do is finish them. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, John. Spanish Tragedy is the subject of our next public lecture, indeed, on Sunday. Peter Womack will be here to talk to you in this place as the first of a continuing program, first after today's launch, of these B&A public lectures. What remains to be done is to have the inaugural lecture from Professor Andrew Gurr, after which he has agreed to take questions from the audience. And when that happens, there'll be a microphone passing around because we'd like to capture those questions. And also the project team will then, after Andrew's questions have been answered by him, will sit up here on the stage and answer any questions from the audience about the project, the details of what we've done, how we've done it, what you may do with it, which, as I said, is essentially anything that you wish to do. But before that happens, before Andrew Gurr's lecture, which is scheduled for 3 o'clock, we're going to take a short comfort break. So if you need the toilet, now's the time to go. Say 1 or 2 minutes after three, we're going to reconvene for the rest of this afternoon's events. Thank you.
I've done it before.